Hi, and welcome to ArtCast. I'm your host for this episode, Denny Boynton from Microsoft. Joining me today is Derek Jarrell from the Winchester Corporation and Jim McPherson from Quilogy. Guys, thanks very much for joining me on ArtCast. I appreciate
it. Thanks for having us.
So we're going to talk today about one of the coolest applications I've seen in a while. It's a really different kind of use for Silverlight and WPF, and I'm going to go ahead and we're going to start off. Tell me a little bit about what you guys do at your respective companies.
Like Denny said, my name is Derek Jarrell, and I manage Winchester's website and their consumer promotions. So I hired into Winchester about 7 months ago to help manage their online experience and manage the redesign of our website.
Yeah, and this is Winchester, the company that created the rifle that won the West kind of thing, right? But you guys make ammunition.
Yeah, Winchester ammunition specifically.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay. I'm Jim McPherson. I'm the digital practice manager here at Quilogy. So I get involved in all the interactive marketing projects, especially anything involved in Silverlight. Been working with Derek in Winchester for about 5 years, and I kind of function as the account manager there, helping drive the strategy for different projects.
Outstanding. Okay. So the ballistics calculator. Can you tell me a little bit about how the idea kind of came into existence? Because I'm not a sportsman myself, so I'm just trying to, you know, when I saw it, it immediately resonated what it did. But can you tell me a little bit about how the idea came up and why you decided to go down this path?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'll just jump in. I mean, it's always been a key reason that people go to the Winchester website going way back. And Winchester's catalogs provide ballistic data in a chart format. But looking at some of the web statistics, focus groups we've done, and web surveys, we kind of realized that the majority of people going to the site were advanced shooters, people that were very comfortable shooting and had a lot of experience doing it. And the number one reason that segment was going to the site was to get ballistics data. So that was the real driver in terms of what content we wanted to provide. Beyond that, we got into a lot of discussions about how the heck would we provide that content. You know, should that be in sort of a flash experience? Should it be graphical, tabular type of data? And traditionally, we had provided it in kind of standard HTML page format, if you will, with, you know, the different muzzle velocity and different energy values available just kind of in a page view sort of scenario.
Right. So, again, I think, like Jim, I think he hit it, you know, right on the head, that the majority of our users right now are the advanced shooters and hunters that really want to get detailed ballistic information. And the one fallback to, you know, what we've done historically was we provided that, like Jim said, in a table format in our, you know, printed catalog and then on static HTML pages on our website. But that didn't allow them to customize the shooting conditions. So with the ballistic calculator, they now have the ability to compare multiple products, take a look at the specific range conditions or shooting conditions that they're going to be involved in, change their, you know, their wind speed, altitude, sight height, and really see, you know, how are these products going to perform in the situation they're going to be in.
So what was the experience like without this? I mean, how did people make those kinds of decisions before, you know, you guys, before this type of thing came about?
Right. They really couldn't. I mean, they couldn't look up ballistics data based on, you know, what their actual shooting conditions were. They would just navigate through a sort of traditional product-oriented.
Sure. And it was kind of hit or miss. I mean, kind of like trial and error, go buy some of the products, see how it works in the field, try again if it didn't work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of trial and error, I think, that went along with it. We also have some technical people at the Winchester facility that, you know, fielded a lot of phone calls. So we'd have a lot of phone calls from our user base that had specific questions. Hey, I looked in your catalog and I saw the muzzle velocity for, you know, 100 yards, 200 yards, 300 yards, but I really need to know how is it going to perform at 250 under these specific conditions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some of our technical experts would, you know, they would do some calculations, manual calculations, and provide them with as much information as they could. But it still was a very, you know, kind of a painful process to get that type of information.
Sure. Well, and I imagine, I mean, because there are other factors in the application too, right? You've got temperature, crosswind, altitude. What are some of the other things that
you have? Temperature, altitude, wind speed. You have sight in range, your max range, and then you have the ability to compare up to 5 different products.
Wow, that's really, and we're going to look at the application in a little bit, and we'll do a walkthrough of how it works so everybody can see how that works. So this is kind of a cool story because, you've taken the application, and you said you told me earlier you started building it on Silverlight because of the ease of development, you know, in that particular space. But it's also a WPF application that you guys have built for the Surface, table computer. How did that whole thing evolve? Because I mean, you know, usually we say, you know, there's a lot of crossover with XAML, but that migration can also be kind of painful as well. What was your experience? Why did you decide it was a compelling business reason to do that?
To do it on the Surface machine.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, initially, I mean, this was a web app that we envisioned for broad consumption to kind of provide the really dynamic, you know, variables that the user could play with. But we got to a point where we said, okay, how are we going to roll this thing out? How are we going to promote this? How are we going to let people know that this functionality has been added? And it just so happened that Winchester's biggest trade shows were, you know, a month out. And we said, hey, the best way we could promote this would be to migrate it, if you will, over to Surface and make it the centerpiece of the trade event. And that's really that's where that came from.
That's very cool.
Right. And what it did was it allowed us, at our different, you know, different trade shows that we go to, it allowed us to connect with our customers in a way we hadn't been able to connect with them before. So historically, we would take out a catalog, we would talk to the customers about the Blistic information, but it was not a very interactive or engaging experience. So this allowed the customers to really kind of hone in and select their conditions and really see what the Blistic calculator could do for them and see how easy it was for them to use.
Well, now that brings another question to mind, and that is, does this differentiate you in your industry? You know, because it seems to me like you know, the firearms industry in general still operates very much as an early 20th century kind of industry. Is this sort of elevating you and making you, you know, kind of differentiating you from your competition?
Yeah, I think definitely it's elevating us and kind of setting us apart from our competition. Like Jim mentioned a few minutes ago, currently on the market, when you look at ballistics, I think most companies do what we do. They do the printed catalog that has the static kind of table format. They will have in a table format on static HTML pages. And there are a couple different ballistic calculators on the market that you can download an application to your desktop. Mm-hmm. But they're not a really engaging experience. They don't contain the different range conditions that you can edit. They don't have the ability to compare up to, you know, five different products. So I think this application kind of is an all-in-one application where you can compare all your products, you can set your own range conditions, and I think it definitely does help set us apart from our competition.
The other apps that we saw on the web weren't really web apps. I mean, they were client apps that you'd download,
right,
and then you were disconnected. And so if the manufacturer came out with product editions that they made available, users who had downloaded that plugin or Java applet or whatever it was, you know, they're disconnecting. They don't know they necessarily have to go back and get it. So we were intent on a web application,
right,
you know, so that we could do that. And frankly, there's no way we could have gotten it from a web app to a WPF client app in 4 weeks for Surface had we not kind of gone with this type of solution architecture.
Right.
That made a huge difference there.
Right.
So,
and another point on that also, in addition to being able to update the product information, we're able to seamlessly update with enhancements on our application. So if you used a downloadable application that you installed on your desktop, it was immediately outdated. If we wanted to add enhancements, you'd have to go back out, download it, and do a reinstall. Mm-hmm. With the Silverlight version, it's a pretty seamless process.
Right, it delivered over the web. Well, and you also took the ballistics calculation engine itself, and that's exposed as essentially a service endpoint in the cloud, right?
Right.
So did you do that specifically to enable these multiple clients? I mean, was that an architectural decision you guys talked about as far as being able to extend the client space for that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we didn't know all the different ways we would extend the application, but, I mean, you know, Jeff and our architecture team have that sort of architectural approach anyway, and we knew there were other things we were going to do eventually with it, so we wanted to abstract some of that stuff if we could, just to make it easier to extend down the road.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, that makes a lot of sense. So, well, speaking of Jeff, I think I'm going to slip over and have a conversation with him, and we'll talk about some of the technical aspects of this.
Fantastic.
All right.
Yep.
I'm here with Jeff Faddick, the .NET Practice Manager for Quillogy in St. Charles, Missouri. Thanks for joining me, Jeff.
No problem. Nice being here.
So we talked earlier with Derek about why Winchester sort of made the decision to go with this particular technology solution for their ballistics calculator. So now I'd like to get the technical story behind
okay.
it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do for Quillogy?
Sure. So I'm the .NET Practice Manager and a solution architect for Quillogy. primarily what I do is I work with the customers on the business side, and I say, well, what are you wanting? What kind of requirements are we talking about? And then I try and translate that back to our development team, and we come up with a good solution that hopefully shows a lot of value to the customer.
Great, excellent. So when you got started, you've got many facets to this calculator. Now you've got the Silverlight piece, you've got the part that's running on Surface. Right. Tell me a little bit about how you made some of those early decisions from an architectural standpoint, why you went with, the plan that you did. How did that work out?
Sure. So yeah, like you said, we started off with Silverlight, and we knew that we wanted to really highlight that. That's really the focus of the effort, is getting people to their website.
Okay, right, because their customers were asking for help with the website,
definitely.
Right? That was the key, okay.
Yeah, a lot more data, as you probably heard in the previous conversation. So they wanted to see more about the ballistics data, and we wanted something exciting, though, that they could take to trade shows, and really get a huge demographic, and so we brought in the Surface idea.
Okay.
And that's kind of how those two platforms came together. Some of the initial things that we started talking about were, how do we research Silverlight, what it can do, what it can't do, and then look at Surface and what it can do and can't do, especially with multi-touch in the mix there, and really try to say, let's make sure that we have something that's going to be a fairly familiar experience between the two. That was important. So what we focused on first, like you said, was the Silverlight, and we tried to drive our designers to really highlight, the cool stuff that you can do with Silverlight. So we really tried to show the animation, the interactivity, the speed, things like that, and then make sure we could do all that stuff on the Surface.
Okay. All right. So you took an interesting route. Mm-hmm. You decided to do the Silverlight 2 application first.
Yes.
And then you started a somewhat parallel effort to start building it out on the Surface.
Right.
Usually we recommend that you do that the other way around. You start with WPF and then you kind of move to the subset that's available in Silverlight.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that experience and some of the choices you had to make from an architecture standpoint to help facilitate that.
Sure. So one of the nice things about doing it that way was that we started off with a subset, and we pretty much knew, for the most part, anything we did there, we know we could do over on the WPF side. Mm-hmm. So that made us feel pretty good, actually. But yeah, we had some problems. There's a lot of limitations in the subset, that you had to really consider. So when it came to services, which we ended up using, we had to look at, Silverlight 2.0 only supports basic HTTP binding. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. So let's make sure we don't, mess that up as we build the endpoints and such on the Surface side.
Okay.
So that's a big challenge for us.
What other types of technology mismatches did you find between the two platforms?
Probably the biggest ones, the ones that especially the designers got excited about, were the controls.
Mm-hmm.
And Silverlight 2, definitely a good set of controls compared to Silverlight 1, but what was available on Surface, what was available on Silverlight, definitely didn't meet up. So we had to build some controls from scratch on both platforms just so we could get the shared experience.
Really? Okay, so like which controls did you actually have to get in and customize?
So we had to just customize the appearance of the slider for the Silverlight 2. Pretty much had slider capability pretty easy out of the box. But we had to make it look a little bit different, and not only for aesthetic reasons, but because we wanted to be able to match it over on the Surface side. So we had to make sure there was something big enough that you could touch and things like that, mm-hmm. and they all kind of felt the same. On the Surface side, we actually had to create the combo box from scratch. There's no Surface combo box of any kind. So that was completely, a combination of pop-ups and text boxes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little more challenging, but definitely created the shared experience. It's hard to tell the difference between the two apps.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're identical. But that also brings me to another question is, when you got to the WPF app on the Surface, then you had to enable it for multi-touch as well.
Yeah.
Based on your reaction, I'm assuming there were some challenges there as well.
Definitely. The SDK for Surface is really nice. Mm-hmm. I have to say, it comes with a simulator that allows you to develop and test against that. It's a little bit slow, and it's another app that you have to kind of build into, if you will. So you hit F5 and it shows up in the simulator, but it takes a little bit of time.
Okay.
And so to speed things up, we were definitely on a time crunch. To speed things up, what we did is actually develop it in pure WPF. And we got all the trickiest stuff down first. So the bullseye target and things like that, we made sure that we figured out how to do those in WPF. And then the idea was we just simply put Surface in front of all those controls and different elements, and it would be multi-touch enabled on the Surface.
Okay.
Some places that worked really well, some places didn't work out so well.
Okay.
But in the end, we got it all figured out.
So. All right. Now, since you've got two fairly powerful client
technologies here at WPF and Silverlight. What's interesting is that you actually took the calculation engine and made that a service. And, you know, I guess my question would be, why did you choose to put that out into the cloud as opposed to having that run on, the, on you know, leverage the power on the client?
Sure. So there was two big reasons we did that. One of them was simply the time factor. We didn't want to build it for both and debug it and bug fix for both. So we were afraid they'd sort of branch off over time. Even if we had the same person working on it initially, here's the Silverlight version, here's the Surface version, if you will, that we were afraid they'd diverge, and then we'd be in trouble.
You'd be getting different calculations on both clients.
Which one's right, which one's wrong, and do we have to make changes to both? And we didn't have the time, honestly, to do that. So that was one of the questions we had early on. As we went through it, we realized that it was a lot more complicated. The calculations that we were given were tough to interpret. And so we realized as we went through iterations of changing those calculations, it was, you know, thank goodness we built it all in one service that we could change, and the UIs could just continue to develop over time.
Okay.
And who cares, you know, what the changes were. And so that made our whole production just super accelerated.
So from the service standpoint, any plans or anything you've heard about? I mean, obviously when you're on a trade show floor, you know, you may not always have ubiquitous internet connectivity. I mean, is there any way for these things to run occasionally connected? Or are there any thoughts about how you might enable these things to run occasionally connected?
So first time out, for the first show, we didn't want to take any chances. So we actually installed the services on the Surface device along with the client app, just to make sure that if we couldn't get out to the internet,
we had to switch
the config and away we go.
Off it goes.
It's a basically a Vista box running underneath the Surface, so it was pretty easy to put IIS on, put SQL on there, and do all those kinds
and
of things.
The service is implemented with WCF, so you could change the basically the addressing in the config file and redirect the client to go talk to it. Okay, very cool.
But we definitely, as time went on, we said, look, we're going to continue to update the service with changes. So let's make sure we have it in the cloud, make sure that's our master, and then we'll try and always use that.
Okay.
But we always have a backup plan.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So here's the tough question for your part of the interview. So when you were, it makes sense that you were talking about building this in Silverlight because you really kind of had the Surface in mind from the beginning and you were going to go WPF with that. But the question is there a compelling reason why you didn't choose to do this in Flash and Flex as opposed to building it in Silverlight?
Yeah. Well, one of the big reasons we did this, and especially when we started talking about Surface, was simply that we knew we could make this a shared user experience. We knew we wouldn't have as many challenges getting the same controls, getting the same look and feel. We also knew from a developer and designer experience, we could reuse all that knowledge so that it would be something that we built it here. We finally figured out how to do the bullseye zoom and positioning, which was a really tricky part of it, actually, probably harder than the physics part. We knew once we figured that out, we could reuse a lot of that knowledge over here without trying to figure out, well, how does that going to work in the scripting language in Flash? And then we just said, let's not even mess with it. So we used XAML a lot and then really tried to focus on that. Was my, you know, if the developers complain about anything, Jeff was always honest about the XAML. Do XAML. And that's one of the reasons why, is so that we knew if we could do as much of it in XAML as we could figure out, that it would be a lot easier to port.
And did you find, I mean, outside of the controls that you were there mentioning before, I mean, did you find that the XAML did port pretty well between the two different platforms?
Yeah, and sometimes we even created the controls so that the XAML would be portable. So we would actually create, you know, like a user control in the WPF side. Even though we really didn't need it, it would just have like the slider in it, and that's all it would be. But at least the XAML for the base page, if you will, was exactly the same as the Silverlight side. And so for a lot of our help screens and statistics chart and all that, it's exactly the same XAML.
Okay.
I mean, no difference at all.
So from the standpoint of thinking about, and the thing that we never think about until we have to do it is the maintenance of the two separate applications.
Yeah.
You know, people go, well, you got two separate code bases, but really you're kind of getting around that in that you can't do a machine for machine sharing of the XAML, but you've got 80%, 70%? What would you say?
Easily 80%.
So you've got 80% of the UI that you can basically move between the two platforms and then make tweaks to.
Right.
Which is better than running, you know, two completely separate technologies.
And that took a lot of forethought on the architecture up front, because we had to think about, well, we don't really need this as a user control, but let's make sure it is, that way we can share that base page.
Okay.
But thank God, you know, we did that, because it made life, as changes came through, as new features wanted to be added and things like that, and deadlines loomed, it made life a whole lot easier.
Yep. So. Yep. Well, it's no wonder it won the Innovative Product of the Year at the SHOT Show earlier yeah. this year. I mean, it's yeah. you guys did a great job on it.
And, thank you.
Thank you very much for talking with me. All I appreciate
right. no
it.
No problem. Thanks, Denny. Right.
So I have to tell you both, this application looks great. I think it's very exciting. Can you tell us an idea when, you know, where this is going to be on the website or how people can access it online?
You'll be able to go to winchester.com and access the ballistic calculator. We have a lot of information about it right now on our website, and we're looking at about a mid-May launch.
Okay. All right. I mean, it shows a ton of innovation, especially in the way that it's being deployed out to these different clients. Do you guys have any future enhancements you're looking at doing, or any new ways to deliver the content?
Yeah, I think Jim and I we've been talking extensively about, you know, the future versions of this application, mm-hmm. and I think we both have some really good ideas on where we'd like to see this application go and some different functionality that we'd like to include in it. And Jim, I don't know if you want to talk to some of the different...
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're constantly sort of envisioning and planning where we're taking this thing, and
sure.
it changes all the time, but we know for a fact we're going to add mm-hmm. additional product data soon after the launch. Right now it's focused on centerfire, which I said was the largest segment of the user base were centerfire rifle users, so we wanted to deal with them first. We'll be adding slug, handgun, pretty much all single projectile ammunition will be out there
right.
very soon. Beyond that, we're, you know, it's a rich internet app, and we want to make it as rich as we can. We're looking for all kinds of immersive types of enhancements that we'll bring to it. Maybe there'll be a recoil effect.
Mm-hmm.
maybe there'll be different reticles that the shooter can choose from.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's all kind. I mean, your mind can just race. There's all kinds of different things we're kicking around that we might do as we roll it out and promote different enhancements to the market.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to leave it set. We want to make sure that we're continually updating and adding features and functionality. So
it sounds like you've absolutely put the right architecture in place to do that. Yeah. So Jim McPherson.
Thank you, Denny.
Derek Gerald, thank you very much
thank
for
you,
joining
Denny.
Me today. Well, that's it for our cast this time. My name is Denny Boynton, and I will see you next time. Thank you.